Show. Talking
Blog
that
Talk
stuff.
Radio.
Welcome to the War Room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
Give it to you. How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise to talk sports on a national level? Roll with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats, the 4 for 26 or the war in Kuwait. It's the War Room with 5 nights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What's good, sports fans? Thanks for joining us. You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports. I'm Devin McMillan, and I'm joined at the round table by my co-host, Jimmy Williams, Akil Bayon, and B. Austin. We got a great show for you today, a little NBA, NFL, World Series, and a whole lot more. But halfway through this hour, we'll be talking to MMA fighter Kyle Sefcik about his upcoming bout this Saturday in Baltimore. So join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports to get into the conversation. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That number is 323-410-0012. If you're a sports talk fanatic, be sure to check out some of our partners. So, you know, for the very, very best in sports talk, besides what we're doing right here in the War Room, tune in to Roy and Chris on the Broad Street Line every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on Blog Talk Radio, and check the listings for Brandon and Daniel of Sports Trap Radio, now on iHeartRadio. Don't worry, if you can't catch them live, you can hear and watch these guys and all of our other partner podcasts and webcasts at worldroomsports.blogspot.com. In addition, don't forget to catch us in syndication 3 times on Fridays on newviberadio.com. That's 7 a.m., 1 p.m., and 7 p.m. Eastern Time, and on Sundays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on fatsradio.com. What's good, generals? What's happening this week?
Man, nothing much, man. Just, you know, trying to stay out of trouble as normal. You know, not trying to end up like some of these athletes that we're going to talk about throughout this beloved show of ours.
Man, I extend a congratulations to Kanye and Kim, even though he hit it first.
Good deal. Good deal. You say even though he hit it first. Yeah, I heard Kanye did the whole dog and pony show, rented out the AT&T park or whatever. I don't know why, because there was nothing in season. How many of his friends did he want to see the whole thing? Why did he rent out a stadium? But all right, I heard she got like a 15-carat diamond.
He ain't even got no friends.
Well, first off, the reason that Kanye rented out a stadium and did all that is because he's going to get the attention and have us talking about it, and it works. You know,
well, that's all the bars
they
gonna get.
Thing on video, it's on YouTube, but it gets zillion views, and it is. This is the world we live in, a bunch of sheep.
But Kanye don't like attention. You know, he want to smack everybody camera away. And come on, man.
He like attention when he likes attention, man.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, man, let's talk about what happened while everybody was on the ground this week, man.
All right, let's do that.
And for those that have been living under a rock, or perhaps this is your first time listening to our show live or via podcast, While You Were On The Grind is brought to you by DirecTV. If you'd like a better TV experience than cable has to offer, which includes the NFL Sunday Ticket, go right to our website, warroomsports.com, and click on the DirecTV logo and get a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. We got the hookup. Go to warroomsports.com and click on the DirecTV logo. Now, gentlemen, my beloved Broncos lost to the Indianapolis Colts on Sunday Night Football. But there was a play during that game which, you know, was a very exciting play, hilarious play. But listen to this. You guys remember when there was a punt and our punt returner, Trindon Holliday, was returning the punt? He got knocked out of bounds. He got hit crazy by the punter.
You got knocked up.
McAfee is the guy's name. The punter of the Indianapolis Colts leveled Trindon Holliday. I mean, it was like, it's the hardest hit I've ever seen a punter lay on a player.
He gave him a virus check.
Yeah, pretty much. But here's the thing, though, B. Austin. After this, he gets a random PED test. They say, How random was it really, though? They say he had a random PED test, but do you think it's random or they saw that play?
The whole week, like, thinking about this story, I'm like, could it really have been because of that, or is this really just a coincidence? Either way, it's funny as hell that he nails a kick returner the night before, and then, you know, he gets a little random test envelope. So I don't know, man. Like, was it that bad? Do y'all think the NFL really would have done it because of that? Or is this just the funniest coincidence in sports this week?
I mean, I think it's a coincidence, personally. Because the test, I mean, the game was just on Sunday. And the test, you know, was just right away. And normally they have those names drafted and picked prior to the test, at least a week before. And the hit, it wasn't even as, I mean, it was a hard hit, but a lot of it had to do with momentum. I mean, the angle he took and then the speed that the runner had. I mean, it wasn't like he just
punted it. Punters usually get out the way.
A lot of it.
Plus, it was a plus.
A lot of it
had
to do with him being 5'5" and 138 pounds.
This is true. So the punter had the courage to make the hit. But with that being said, this is still a punter.
he had the courage,
but he's still a punter. He's a punter. Punters don't do that. Punters usually fake like they're trying to make a hit when they know they weren't really trying. They're like, you know.
What this guy did, though, he just ran into the dude with his face and, like, hit him real hard. It was a terrible
hit. The dude bounced back up. How they got back up, like, in less than a second.
See, but I tweeted about that, though, because he jumped up and started strutting down the sideline. Now, it was a nice return, 56 yards, but you just got nailed by the punter. You know what I mean? In this case, it was the kickoff because, you know, he does kickoffs instead of Vinatieri. But you just got nailed by the kicker slash punter. You can't get up and strut. Like, even if you made it down to the 10-yard line, you can't get up and strut. You just got nailed. Like, he lifted him off his feet like he was, like, Prodigy from Mobb Deep or something. First dude talk, getting lifted off his...
It's not even that he got nailed. It's that he got nailed by the punter. You can get nailed by anyone else on kick coverage. You can't get nailed by the punter and get up and act like, you know.
And, Kill, you also know that a lot of times when guys get, like, you know, destroyed or hit very hard, they try to, like, jump up fast anyway to act like it didn't hurt, you know, knowing what the truth is.
True.
Yo, shout out to Terry Crews. That's right, Terry Crews, the actor. If y'all get any chance, just go to YouTube and put Terry Crews knocked out on Monday Night Football. When he played in the NFL, he had one of them situations where he had a collision and he got knocked out and tried to jump up real fast and was, like, walking every which way except for the way he was supposed to be. So, at any rate, next story I want to talk about is this. And this is a story I definitely want to hear you guys' opinion on. Parents file bullying charges on a high school football coach after his team wins the game 91-0. This made the actual local news here in Philadelphia. And the parents were outraged. Several parents were outraged, but one went as far as to, like, file charges and accuse this guy of bullying.
Yeah,
I can almost guess where you guys follow this, but I want to hear anything.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's another example of the softening of society. I actually had a conversation with somebody about this last night who was actually defending this. I mean, we argued for hours. I just don't see how, you know, you can even bring yourself to file bullying charges against a coach. The coach actually did everything he could to lessen the embarrassment for the team, but the team was just bad. Like, they ran 21 plays with the starters. They were up 56-0 by halftime. The whole second half was second and third stringers. He agreed to a running clock, and they ran the ball every single play, you know, in the second half with the second and third stringers. Like, the problem that some people have with it, you know, because they kept scoring or whatever. But the point is, like, when you have second and third stringers who probably wouldn't get into the game if they were playing anybody worth their salt, you can't tell these guys to come into the game and not score when they have the opportunity to score. This might be the only time they get to do that in their high school career. So I don't like this one bit, man.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think when they got to, like, 70, they was like, yo, let's see if we can score 100?
I'm sure the backups were probably in the huddle doing that because, you know, this is the only time they're ever going to get to shine like that. Well, maybe not ever because supposedly this district that this school got placed in is really weak
and they've been beating people by like an average of 44 points or something like
but
that.
But here's the thing, though. This is like a microcosm of what we see in society already. I mean, half of the society is already transgender. All right, because here's my question, right? Now, I mean, you gentlemen, you all have sons. If your son plays on the other team, like your son plays on a team that loses 91-0, like, how do you sit down and draft a letter accusing the coach of bullying? Could you even, like, could you find yourself
going? That's whack. That's soft. That's just, that's horrible. Mm-hmm. I mean, play better. I mean, take your loss like a man or a kid.
Losses.
Get better.
Right.
And it's horrible.
You sound like a kid.
Be awesome.
No,
be
awesome. Right,
could you find yourself sitting down to draft a letter accusing the other coach of being a bully?
If my son participates in a loss of 91 points, he's going to get a spanking, and then I'm going to take him to the opposing team and have him apologize to the coach and the players for wasting their time.
No, see, I'm not even gonna go that far because your son could be the nicest person in the state, but if the rest of his team is trash, then it's not really his fault. It's your fault for sending them to the school that you sent them to. But on the other hand, though, like I really can't see that. I can't sit down and I think it's a teaching moment for the kids who lost. I think instead of you know coddling them and crying wolf and writing letters, I think it's an opportunity for a teaching moment. You know, you guys got to get yourself up, brush yourselves off. We're going to go back to practice, or we're going to learn how to play better. We're going to practice harder. We're going to play better. You know, even if these teams like these are just too good for us, we're still not going to go in here and lay down. We're going to play every game, you know, as hard as we can. We're not going to cry about it. You know what I mean? It's a teaching moment. And we had some moments like that. Akil, B. Austin and I, when we were coaching, we were trying to start a new program at a charter school in D.C., we had moments like that. And we used those moments as teaching moments. And by year two, we had a very viable team. Like, we went out there and we were competitive. We won games that a lot of people thought that we couldn't win because of the lumps we took the year before. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And they learned how
to
be a team.
The first year was pretty rough.
Yeah,
we got to see Kevin Durant in high school, and he probably beat us by about 90. So we are speaking from experience. I'm gonna say honestly, when I first saw this, it took me back to a moment, and you guys are gonna have to refresh my. Well. You'll have to tell me what TV show I'm talking about, but do you recall there was a professor on stage and they asked a question of him, why is America the greatest country?
That's from The Newsroom, which airs on HBO. It's the greatest 5 minutes of TV history. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, the Newsroom, it cut that check. Yes, HBO, pay us, put us on air. But this story reminded me of that moment, like everything that's wrong in this society, globally, but specifically here, this type of stuff happens. You lose, you get upset with losing. Instead of teaching your children, you set the example of complaining about being a loser instead of working harder, changing your tactics, changing your strategy to improve and get better. You teach them that when you get your ass kicked, you complain about it.
This is
like,
the thing, though.
What
bothers me is this. You have schools now that don't even keep score with certain sports, and they say everybody wins, everybody gets a trophy. But the fact of the matter is that's not real life. So when you coddle someone like that, when they get in real life and they fall on their face, they won't know how to react to it. I can only imagine the parents sitting down to draft a complaint this soft, like especially if it was a man. I think if a man sat down to draft a complaint this soft, this is how it went.
When I'm alone in my room, sometimes I stare at the wall and in the back of my...
Yo, that's all I can envision, yo. It
yo,
had to
Pop,
go that way.
I keep Pop needs love.
Yo, that's the softest thing I've ever heard.
If your dad drafts this letter, he's probably the choir director at church.
No, but look, listen, though, I don't even think it's people at church this soft. Like, Jimmy made a good point, and I'm just going to, you know, end it with this. Like, like he said, like if this is how you're taught, this is how you're brought up, you're going to have problems later on in life when you learn that life isn't fair. And I'm not trying to, you know, get all extra serious on this topic, but I'm telling you, those are the people that's going to end up with a gun in their mouth. You know what I mean? Because they can't handle things because he's laughing. You're a crazy dude.
Well,
but
I'm dead serious, though.
I'm dead serious. Those because people don't know how
situation.
To cope. You can't cope.
There isn't one kid in this universe that I've ever met that hasn't had that moment when they told any parent or guardian or something, like, yo, life isn't fair. This isn't fair. The difference is my mom told me, you know what, you're right. A lot of people's parents would try to make whatever that situation is and make it right instead of letting them know that, hey, life isn't fair. You know, so you have to be able to suffer with these things. I know we're talking about a high school football game, but it's deeper than that. Speaking of that,
beyond that. Speaking of that, like in Maryland, and there's some teams from a club in Olney, Maryland. You know, they have different level teams, different age levels. Three of their five teams are being banned from the playoffs this year because they are too good. They're too good. Other parents are complaining, thinking that they're stacking some of their teams, like their mid-level teams, with players who should be on the top-level teams. So the league has decided to not allow three of their teams to participate in the playoffs, and all three of these teams are undefeated in their divisions.
Now we're punishing kids for winning. We're punishing kids for winning.
We know you're going to win the championship, so you can't go. I mean, you have the nerve to do this with little kids. Like, you're trying to scar kids for life. Like, I don't get it, man. Society
is... At this point, man, I don't even think there's anything else to say about this. This is just a disgrace. There is one more story I want to talk about in terms of why you were on the grind, and that's Brandon Jacobs. Right? Now, we know that on Twitter, it gets very crazy in terms of what athletes say and what's said to them.
This is not
the first time it's happened, but Brandon Jacobs has been threatened over fantasy football. Deb, do you have the exact tweet?
Yeah, and this dude, after he made these tweets and the backlash came, yeah, he was on Twitter bitching. So I'm going to add to his pain and give out his government, and I'm going to give out his Twitter handle. The dude's name is Andre Rayner, and his handle is at DMMEBOO. And he tweeted the other night to Brandon Jacobs. He said, on life, Brandon, if you don't rush for 50 yards and two touchdowns tonight, it's over for you and your family. Then he went on the tweet because, you know, some people could have taken it as a joke.
Is at DMM what?
At DMMEBOO.
Okay.
And then he went on the tweet 2 minutes later, you know, at Brandon Jake, at his handle, fulfill my orders stated in the tweet or that's your life, bro, and I'm not playing.
Yo,
that's the crazy part. For what
up, sir? Word.
Yeah. To all the killers and the $100 billers.
Nah, that's not what he is. That's not what he is, though, because some time later, these were his next four tweets, deactivating for a couple of days. Then he said in big letters, I'm deeply sorry. Oh, my God, this was not supposed to happen. WTF, I didn't mean anything that I said. Please make this stop, at GatorBoyRB. That's Brandon Jacobs. Then he tweeted him again, at GatorBoyRB, I'm literally begging you right now. Like, I'm scared. AF, you know, I'm scared is, please make this stop. Then he said, I literally cannot do anything else but just hope nothing happens, deactivate, and hope it drifts away. He is bitching right now.
Yo, so he went from Mobb Deep to But here's the funniest thing. It's not even funny. This may be the saddest thing. I put his name in. I searched his name in Twitter, so I see that his account has been deactivated, but people are still adding him. And some of the tweets are like, how could you threaten this man's life? I should kill you. Seriously? So you say, how does he threaten his life by threatening his life? Okay.
The internet is an evil place. Y'all know we know all about trolls. Y'all know we know all about trolls. We don't we haven't gotten our lives threatened, but you know, we just get disrespected.
You got your life threatened.
I did get my life threatened once.
Yeah,
I was thinking about the latest trolls.
I definitely have gotten my life threatened.
I was just thinking about the latest trolls where they just disrespectful and say, you know, they just come on being ignorant for no reason. So, you know, yeah. I'm going to make you famous right now. Shout out to the Tropolinski brothers from Chi-Town. Now they live in San Ann. One of them said they were going to listen to the show tonight. So shout out to the Tropolinski brothers. We got love for y'all. Keep supporting.
We got troll. We got telling the trolls on YouTube. We got trolls everywhere. And the bigger we get, the more trolls we get. And I appreciate all the trolls out there. Thanks for the support. But the one guy at one point threatened Dev on the sports argument. Yo, he asked him what's his address. He was going to come blow his house up.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah,
and then, then tag some people, like, ask about him. He gave you references. But at any rate, man.
I gave him an address to somewhere in Philadelphia that he probably didn't want to show up. He might be dead right now.
We haven't heard from him since.
nothing to do with me. It's just, you know, the address I gave him. If he was dumb enough to go, then, you know.
Yeah, it's a sad thing, man.
God bless.
It's funny when you see people do that. They think they're funny. And first off, I was looking at his name. His name was DM me, boo. So you know he thinks he's a clown anyway. That was
spelled it out. I didn't even realize what it meant.
Yeah, at DM me, boo. But he's a clown anyway, and he's just trying to get attention, and it backfired on him. So
soft,
it is what it is, man. Yeah, he definitely is soft, man. You know, anyway, man, that's what happened this week while you were on the grind. We have some birthdays to get to. Dev, who's having a birthday?
All right. I'm sure, is Casey Mack in the chat room? Because I'm sure he will help me out with the ones that we don't
Casey
say.
Mack is definitely listening. He was just
shout
in the
out
chat
to Casey Mack. All right, well, of course, birthdays are brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment of injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates, treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area and beyond. Just visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. But when you do that, you have to make sure that you tell them War Room Sports sent you. All right? So having a birthday today, former running back, he was more of a threat when he was a Bengal, but he won a Super Bowl with the New England Patriots. Corey Dillon turned 39 today.
Yay!
Shout out to C. Dill. I saw him in a hotel lobby in L.A. a few months back when Akil and I were over there for the
executive prep.
Yeah.
Executive prep.
I think he was creeping, though, because I Googled him and that chick wasn't his wife. My bad, C. Dill. I just dry snitched on
you. Damn,
Keith Van Horn, former Net, former Sixer, former overrated dude, turns 38 today.
Current and still bum.
Doug Flutie. Keith Van Horn wasn't a total bum, though. He just wasn't really a
serve.
He was a talented dude. And his numbers don't even say that he was a bum. He was just soft, exactly.
He had some,
you can be a talented bum.
For his athletic ability and measurables at 6'10", and he had, like, a nice vert, and he could shoot, like, you would have thought, okay, dude.
What Kill just said in a politically correct way is he was good for a white guy.
he looked like Richie Cunningham.
Billy Ho.
Yo, let's put it like this though. His first three
Opie
seasons
looking
in the league, he averaged a dub. Like
he was nice for like a rookie, and as time went on, people realized that he could put up numbers, but he wasn't the guy that you could build your team around.
Exactly.
You know, when you drafted back then, that was still a time where your first draft pick, he went like number two. That was a time when he went number two to Tim Duncan, as a matter of fact. So that was back
when he got traded.
I'm sorry,
like
he went
Tim
three.
Thomas, right?
He went three.
Wasn't Tim Thomas in there?
Tim Thomas was
no.
Yeah,
he got drafted by
the
Sixers, and they traded him to the Nets, right? Something like that.
Yeah.
Because Van Horn said he wasn't going to play for the Sixers, and then he ended up playing for the Sixers later in his career anyway. With Allen
like
Iverson.
This, he had a better career than Tim Thomas.
Yeah. Well.
That ain't hard to do.
I don't know if
his career
was he around as long as Tim Thomas. I mean, I definitely agree with Jim. He had a better career, maybe not a longer.
9 years, 97. He played from 97 to 06, so 9 years.
He looked like the dude on the cover of the Mad magazine.
And I think Tim Thomas played like 10 or 11 kills, so they're very close. It's like 9 years and 10 years.
Yeah, because Tim Thomas spent a lot of time coming off people's bench, you know, and back of people that he was way more talented than. Bust. All right, so my man Flutie Flakes, Doug Flutie, turned 51 this week.
My birthday, yay!
Damn.
What up, Dougie? And the greatest soccer player of all time, by many people's accounts, Pele, turned 73. So shout out to Pele, Flutie Flakes, Keith Van Horn, and Corey Dillon on their birthdays. Salute from the War Room, gentlemen.
My birthday, yay!
All right, so real quick, man, because in a few minutes we're going to have on our favorite MMA fighter, Kyle Sefcik, to talk about his upcoming bout. So if you're listening, you are in the right place. Stay tuned in because Kyle will be with us in about 5 minutes. Anything else, fellas, before I tell everybody how they can get in contact with us?
Not at all. Let's just keep moving.
Hey, I think,
okay,
I think at one point, I was going to say Keith Van Horn, I think he had between a 35 and 40-inch vertical. So the fact that he was 6'10", could shoot and do all of that, it was like, yo, you just basically wasted your talent. But, yeah, Dev, with the other situation, there was a boxer in Mexico who was knocked out and then died 3 days after his knockout. So, and his name is Francisco Frankie Leal. So rest in peace to him and his family. One of the referees or judges thought he was going to die right at the fight.
In the ring?
In the ring, but he held on for 3 days.
You know
that's unfortunate.
About that? I mean, it's definitely not the first time it's happened. But what's sad about those stories is a lot of times when that happens, it scars the person that landed the punch as well. Like, they're both ruined. I mean, one guy's not here anymore, but it's a sad situation. What are you going to say, Dev?
Nah, I was about to say, you know, it's one of them things when somebody usually, when they get their boot stretched, we got jokes we can make about that, but this situation got a little real. We can't even crack nothing about that. So he died 3 days later, Gil?
3 days later, yep.
That is unfortunate. All right. Well, let me let everybody know how they can get in touch with us. You guys can check out our website, warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, email us, info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, make sure you click on the memorabilia tab so you can buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read our latest sports articles in the All's Fair in Sports and More blog. Then click the respective icons to like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, subscribe to our iTunes podcast, download our free War Room Sports mobile app, and to watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't want to do that, you can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow to get updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. So to call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Tech Hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. So we will be in the house again this weekend, fellas, at Shogun 9 out in Baltimore to cover those fights. And, you know, John Rollo and the gang at Shogun, they always put a nice little program, nice little event together. So got a nice little fight card, most of the fighters based in Maryland. What do you guys think? Like, we've been to, two of his events already?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that? While you're doing that, I'll get our guests on the quality.
No problem. He puts a quality event on all the time, and a lot of people don't understand, and especially when it comes to combat sports like boxing as well as MMA, this is where you see some of the best fights. When you go to watch guys while they're on the come-up, everybody likes them, you know, as they become big stars, but this is the best time to see them fight, and these are some crazy, crazy, crazy fights. I know that B. Austin was there last time. We had a lot of experience at MMA events, you know, me, B. Austin, and Dev. Dev is finally getting used to it because, you know, Dev doesn't like to see people get hit. B. Austin. All right, well, maybe B. Austin isn't there. Yeah, but Doctor, yes, like that's the thing. When you watch these fights, like there's some great fights.
Yeah.
The last fight we were at, Kyle, our guest coming up, you know, he actually got a victory in the last time we were there. But it's just tremendous. And when you see the atmosphere, especially with it being in Baltimore, and there's a huge MMA scene in Maryland, and they're all out there. I mean, the entire community, the MMA community is there. It's
right.
Fun that
and
we're going
remember,
to accept them.
Even at the last event, Jimmy, they had the first ever female MMA bout.
Yeah, they get busy too.
Yeah,
I was just telling everybody how Dev is finally comfortable with an MMA event because we went to a couple where, you know,
I tried
he didn't
to save somebody's life last time.
Dev tried to jump in the cage at one event because the guy got knocked out, and you know, Dev was trying to stop. He tried to stop the fight, you know, Rocky style. Throwing it
out. No doubt. But speaking of Kyle, real quick, because we do have him holding on the line. You know, remember Jimmy? The last time we saw him fight, he was fighting at 165. This weekend he's going to be fighting at 205, so that's one of the main things. You know, I want to ask him when we get him on. So, you know, without further ado, we're going to get Kyle on the line now. Like you said, he's basically made it to the point where he's the War Room's resident MMA fighter and MMA expert. So we're going to get Kyle on the line, ask him about his upcoming fight. Kyle,
well,
are you there?
Yes, that's light heavyweight.
I'm here, man.
You here? All right. Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about the event, and I don't know, man. It's weird because, like we just said, the last time we saw you fight, you know, you were fighting at 165. So let's get right into it because two things actually stands out to us. Like I just said,
right.
The last time we had you on before a fight, you were fighting at 165 pounds, and you said it was your last fight. So what made you come back, and why in the world are you fighting at 205 this weekend?
All right, let's see. Well, I mean, I remember after my last fight, I really was done. But I told John Rollins that I had a show going. I was like, there's only one way I'll come back, and that's if you let me fight that guy. And I put it at Dave because he was, like, you know, the biggest, baddest dude there. He's 10-1. He's, you know, Baltimore's, you know, elite guy. He's the guy, you know, that's all over the radio stations that I've been hearing nonstop this week on the radio. So I said,
right.
You know, I'm done with fighting unless you let me fight that dude right there. And they were like, you know, it's probably not going to happen. Commission's not going to pass that. They'll never let a 170 fighter fight a 205 guy. And plus, Dave won't take the fight. It's all this stuff. Anyway, so 9 months go by, and, like, you know, a few months ago, I just get a call and they're like, hey, the fight's yours. You know, if Dave wants to fight you. And I was like, you know, I'm ready, man. Just tell me when. So that's basically what happened with that. And you guys know me personally, and you guys know I just like to fight the biggest, baddest dudes out there and just put on a show.
I was actually about to say that, Kyle. You are definitely a different type of dude, and it is definitely in your it's in your personality to call out the biggest dude in the bunch, because we've covered two of these events, and we have noticed that Dave Dineke, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing the name right, is like the premier fighter in Shogun. You know, when he comes up, the crowd seems to get on the edge of their seats. Now, what I've noticed in his fights, though, it just seems like he's always, because he's a big dude, he seems like he's stronger than his opponents, but he doesn't seem to do much in the way of technical fighting, and that's your specialty. So, you know, is that like a part of your game plan, just to be technical, try to stay away from actually grappling with him?
I'll be honest with you. He's not technical, but he's technical when it comes to wrestling. He's a very good wrestler and a ground opponent. That's how he wins. I mean, and another thing is, you know, he really does have good cardio for a big guy, his strength and cardio. That's why most of his wins, 5 out of 10 of his wins, are decision. That means
they go
all
distance,
3 or 5
right.
rounds.
Mm-hmm.
So I know I don't know what he's expecting, but I'll tell you this. Like, I've played around in a lot of my fights. I play around. I have fun with technique. This one, I'm going to war with this one, man. You guys are going to see right off the break. I'm not going to be playing around this time. you know, it's going to be up to him. Honestly, I think he's going to want to take me down. I want to keep it standing, and I think he knows that too. But, you know, and you guys know me as well as I can go all 3-5 rounds as well. It doesn't really matter.
Mm-hmm.
So if he wants to go the distance, I mean, that's cool too. But, like, the only thing I really worry about with him is his wrestling and ground and pound. It's the only thing I worry about, but I've been there before with many guys. And, yes, he's bigger than most people, but for the most part, I'm just ready to bang.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that you have the advantage. I'm pretty sure you have the advantage when it comes to like jiu-jitsu or whatever. But I just want people to understand, yo, this is a 40-pound difference. That is huge. So, I mean that's tremendous. I mean, you know, that's an accomplishment in itself. Like, what do you think you'll be at on fight night? I know you have to like make the weigh in, but on fight night, what do you think you'll be?
I'll weigh in. Honestly, I'll probably weigh in around 195, 200. I really don't know right now. I keep weighing in between both of those. They're letting me weigh in. They said I have to be at least 196, so I can't be any less than that. That was part of the rules that I agreed to with the commission, because like I said, for this to happen is very rare. You won't see this much. That's why it's going to be a big show. It's going to be awesome to watch. That's why there's a lot of, you know, amped up. People are amped up about this. This doesn't happen often, but I'll weigh about, I'm hoping, because I'm going to weigh in jeans and a sweatshirt and a sandwich in my hand, so hopefully I'm like 200 pounds, and then, you know, we square off, and he's going to look in my eyes and see I'm not playing around, so yeah, it's a big difference, but I'm stronger than I've ever been, and I still have my cardio. I'm mentally stronger than I've ever been, so I'm just ready to go.
Well, let me ask you a question. Outside of this fight, what do you generally walk around at?
I generally walk around at 180, 185.
Okay, so my question is this. How do you put that weight on without, like, losing speed? Like, what was your strategy in terms of training? Like, take us through your training and how you put on weight for a fight like this without losing your speed.
Well, honestly, all I did was I went back to the football days. I kept the cardio and stuff like that in my training, my normal training, but I transferred out some of those days with just straight up lifting, and I, you know, increased my food intake. I ate a lot more, and I lifted a lot. I love deadlifts, and I love squats and stuff like that, so I just did a lot of that, and my legs and butt get really big real fast.
Okay.
Well,
cool.
Kyle,
cool.
If you ever need to, you need some advice on putting on weight, you know, War Room is definitely the place to come to.
Not the kind of weight he needs to be, Austin. Not the kind of weight he needs. But anyway,
Kyle. You know what? Next time I'm coming to you guys. You're absolutely right.
Kyle, here's the question. Is this really the last time? I mean, can you think of anything else outside of this fight that will bring you back to the octagon?
Ah, man, you know, you guys know I don't do this for money. I don't do it for even, you know, fame or glamour. I do it for personal, honestly, personal issues, just personal things I want to do. And, you know, the last time I fought, I really thought I was done. I mean, I really 100% thought I was done. And then, you know, God put this on my plate, and it was just there. So I've been talking to some people, you know, friends and not even and people I just met. They're like, yo, if you beat this dude, do you understand the kind of rep you're going to get and all this stuff and blah, blah, blah? And you're going to be getting calls for this show, and blah, blah, blah. And even after the last show, I was getting calls from all, not just the East Coast, but the West Coast. They're like, yo, we really want you on our show, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know, it just wasn't for me. So I really can't say right now, but if I, you know, I say if, but, you know, I'm going only in there to win. When I get this win, it's not going to be about money or reputation to get another fight. It's just going to be a personal thing. So that's just the honest answer.
Yeah, yeah.
Yo, man, go ahead, Kyle.
No,
yeah, I had somebody was like, yo, UFC's going to be hitting you up, whether they do or not. Like, I was just saying, like, even if they did, like, I would just be like, I honestly don't know if I feel it, you know?
We know how you like challenges. I can only imagine the kind of stuff that's on your bucket list, Kyle. I can only imagine some of the stuff that's on your bucket list considering the challenges you love.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Kyle, this is B.
Yeah, what's up, man?
I was going to say, we know MMA, the sport is growing. Are there any notable up-and-comers, you know, that are coming out of your facility or that you're keeping an eye on or that anyone else on the Shogun card that we should be watching for or anybody else that may make it onto your bucket list?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. Honestly, I'll just keep it, you know, in my gym, first of all. You know, I have a young school. As you guys know, I opened my gym a year and a half ago, and I just got some, you know, good, you know, youth really in my school and also just friends. You know, I'm only 26 years old, and, you know, the average fighter in my school that are really doing MMA classes, you know, are 20, 22 years old. And all my amateurs combined, our record is like 34 and 10. That's really good. So out of all of them combined, I got about, you know, throughout the state, you know, from different schools, I have different guys that train with me. I would say, that's a really good record. So there are some notable guys out there, and they're going to be fighting in January and February, and then I'm definitely going to be inviting you guys out there and stuff like that. So just be ready for, you know, that stuff.
Okay, just for the listeners out there who aren't clear, Kyle's school that he owns is called MMA and Sport out in Damascus, Maryland. So you're saying you guys don't have anybody, you're the only one from your school on this particular card this weekend, though?
On this card, correct. There's one guy that I trained. He'll be on this card as well. But other than that, yes, there's it's just me from my representing my school. But that's going to change after this. You know, I would rather breed champions than be a champion, if that makes sense. I'd rather breed them, and that's what I want after I'm done with this fight. I just want to really focus on these guys. You know, when I'm training for a fight, it's almost like you get a little selfish, and I don't really like to do that too much. So
right.
After this fight, it's going to be just, you know, let's get these guys on their roll. Because I have a lot of amateurs and a lot of young guys that just are like, they're motivated, you know, they want to make this their life, you know what I'm saying? So I just want
right.
to really make that happen, and I will make it happen.
That's what's
cool.
Okay. Kyle, this is Akil. MMA and Sport and KSF Entertainment continue to do big things in the community. Let the War Room world know about some of the things your businesses have on the horizon.
All right. Well, that's a great question. The biggest thing I'm excited about is this event we have called SoundShape. It's a combination of fitness and entertainment. And what it is basically, we have this live DJ. It's my best friend. He plays live, and he DJs. I mean, when we do other events like in D.C. and Baltimore, we play in front of thousands of people. Well, we've combined this for a family atmosphere and a fitness atmosphere. So basically, we have families. We have kids that are 5 years old to adults that are 60 years old. It doesn't really matter. And basically, the best way I can describe it is like a concert rave workout experience. It's an interactive music-based workout. And basically, we've done 5 this year already. They've been all, like, really, you know, they've been testing certain things, indoor, outdoor, light shows, non-light shows, you know, and stuff like that. And it just continues to get different kind of draw. And, you know, now we're getting calls from D.C. saying, hey, we're ready for, like, a huge event on the lawn and stuff like that. So SoundShape is the big thing right now. That's our baby. And that's gonna go bigger than MMA and Sport ever will. That will go bigger than KSF Entertainment ever will. I'm just excited about it. I mean, right now you can hear me just keep talking because I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I've actually seen videos of a few of the events, and yeah, it's huge crowds of people, you know, just exercise, just working out to the music. Yeah, it's interesting. Definitely interesting.
Yeah, and you know, and like you watch it on TV, and it's really cool to see it on the YouTube and stuff like that. But it's the feeling, you know, you get there when you're just like, and when everyone's working out together, you have pro athletes and kids and adults and whatever, and you're all working out together to like just a great, crazy blend of music, and like you kind of get lost, and it's just like this new, good moral, good energy filled, you know, just atmosphere that I personally believe the world needs, and like this SoundShape is where it's at.
No doubt. All right, Kyle, before we get you out of here, though, of course, you know, let everybody know how they can find MMA and Sport online and give them the info for Shogun 9 going on this weekend.
Yeah, MMAandSport.com, you know, MMAandSport.com. That's where you can find us. You can find us on Facebook, website, and also KSFEntertainment.com. You can find out a bunch of stuff on there. And then just Google, you know, Shogun Fights 9, and you'll see all the information on there as well. You can also go to our website or our Facebook page and get all that as well. I actually sold through hundreds of tickets this time. If you saw it last time, I had a fight.
So your section is going to be big.
Yeah, I by far had the biggest section. Well, I at least doubled this time. So you can imagine what it's going to look like this Saturday.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's going to be crazy because he's going to be the home. He's usually having all his everyone's there cheering for him. Well, now we're bringing a squad, and it's going to be crazy because I know my my friends and family. You know, they get hyped for this, and they know me personally, so they know why I'm doing this and what it's going to be. It's going to be a war, and I'm excited about it. That's pretty much it.
And for everybody that's in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area, this event is at First Mariner Arena in Baltimore, Maryland. I believe it kicks off at 7 p.m. on Saturday. So, like Kyle said, you can go to shogunfights.com and get ticket information. Are you out of tickets? because I could send them to you as
well.
I'm
out of tickets.
Okay, yeah, so go to shogunfights.com to see if you can get some tickets. You don't want to miss this event if you're an MMA head. All right, Kyle, there's a chance that you may see us tomorrow at the weigh-in, but if not, you will definitely see us on Saturday, fight night. Of course, we're always in your corner. We're definitely in your corner.
Good luck, Kyle.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you guys later.
All right, man. See you Saturday.
Bye.
All right. Kyle Sefcik, everybody. He will be
forward to that, man.
In Baltimore taking on the Baltimore's People's Champ, Dave Dineke. That should be a good one.
I was saying, Dev, I can only imagine the kind of stuff that's on his bucket list because, you know, he loves challenges.
I know.
My bucket list is kind of just, you know. No, I ain't going to say what my bucket list consists of.
Like, Cal, he might not want to just jump out of an airplane. He might want to, like, surf on the wing or something like that.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? I can't talk about my bucket list. This is an inappropriate show for my bucket list. But anyway, man, let's talk about college football.
Let's jump from MMA to
college football. We went from high school football to MMA. We all over the place. We nice. With that being said, we have a college football expert that's going to join us. This gentleman actually joined us on our Field Vision episode this past week, which you can find at warroomsportstv.com. But without further ado, let's see what Mr. Perdue has to say about this upcoming college football week. Fred, you there?
Yeah.
What's going on, fellas?
How are you, sir?
What up, Fred? What's going on?
I'm great, guys. I'm great.
All right.
Yeah.
Absolutely, man. There's some big stories going on in college football, and everything's
very
not about, you know, the field. I want to get your opinion on this whole situation with Grambling. I know the team, you know, kind of revolted, you know, pun intended.
But
they forfeited a game, and all this whole, like, uprising at Grambling started when they got rid of Doug Williams. And we all know Doug Williams is a Super Bowl winning quarterback, the only African-American Super Bowl. With that being said, though, what's your opinion on this entire situation at Grambling?
Well, I feel that the players are actually in the right. Seeing a lot of the pictures and hearing a lot of the stories, reading a lot of the articles, you have to feel bad for these players, especially with the fact you're riding 19 hours on a bus. We're in 2013. In the age of we can fly. We can fly to games. The amount of money that is generated by these programs, you should not be taking a bus anywhere unless it's to maybe an hour away, and maybe 4 hours is probably the max. You just shouldn't be having it at any level. And a program like Grambling, this will probably be their, if I remember correctly, it's their first losing season since Eddie Robinson was there. And it's just sad to see a program that was just not too long ago, Luke, winning a lot of championships, just falling off. Yeah. And I put it on the administration. I put it on a lot of different areas, but it's also the players have to go out and play. And that has something to do with it, too.
I would like to see the salaries of those in charge as well as the administration, because according to them, they're broke. I saw their facilities in terms of where they train. And it looked like a crack house. Like, it's terrible. Like,
I've seen high schools that have better facilities than that.
I've seen middle schools with better facilities than that. I've seen people's houses that have better facilities. I mean,
I mean, because you got, like, that's not out of the realm of what goes on in HBCUs. Because even at our alma mater, Howard University, like, they don't have facilities that are going to, you know, force the students to have an uprising and forfeit games and complain like that. But to say that you've seen high school with better facilities, I think that might be the norm around some of these places, because the facilities of some of the schools aren't up to par with people who are really, really serious about their sports.
But this is also Grambling, though. You know what I'm saying?
It's
sad,
but Grambling is kind of synonymous with historically black college and university football. You know, when you think of black college football, you think of Eddie Robinson, you think of Grambling, and Eddie Robinson has always been a master of getting the very best out of challenging situations, whether it's players, whether it's facilities, you know, Eddie Robinson is the type of dude that can sometimes inspire a team that isn't necessarily that talented to even step outside of the realm of their own conference and play upper, you know, mid-major schools and get wins in the past. I mean, towards the end there, the last 10 years, he's a little senile. But, you know, historically, it's sad to hear of how Grambling is treating its athletic programs and specifically the one that's kind of its staple, which is its football program. So I'm sad to hear that. And I can't understand them firing someone like Doug Williams, because what other attraction at this point do they have in the recruiting game?
That was part of the issue. The often part of the issue was they fired him and the players loved him. That was part of it. Also,
yeah.
Doug Williams was able to raise money on a private basis. He raised his own
money.
And they wouldn't allow him to use it. They said because he didn't wait and go through the proper channels before doing so. But he was trying to take the initiative.
Typical.
He was trying
that's
to take
typical
initiative
HBCU,
because of how bad the situation
that's typical
was.
HBCU crap, and we all have gone through it. Being like, you know how the crabs in the barrel thing works in HBCU administrations. Now, you kind of hear us down, being a little down on HBCUs. Don't get it twisted. Like, I love my alma mater. I love Howard University. But we've all kind of seen where, you know, you may have one, the left hand over here and the right hand over here, and I can't do this because they didn't ask me. It goes on all the time at historically black colleges
and
universities.
I went to Lincoln University, and there are documentaries on Netflix now that discuss what happens at Lincoln University at the administration level. You ain't hear that from me, but you just go to Netflix. Never mind. But at the end of the day, they're saying that they're going to come back and play now. They're trying to get the situation resolved. The athletic director finally met with the team after a couple weeks of them not having practices. They missed a game, which was an important game. It was actually a homecoming game for the opposing team. That was Jackson State, and now they want to sue Grambling. What do you think is going to happen with this?
Well, I feel Jackson State has they're a bit right on their side, but also at the same time, I'm not going with the – I don't think it's millions. I think it's a lot of hundreds of thousands. But when we say Grambling and Jackson State, that is – it's one of the only televised big-time HBCU battles. And when you take that away, it hurts the fans, it hurts both schools. And really, those are the type games. Those for that level of football, that is your, that's the equivalent of what you may see with a USC Notre Dame or a Florida.
It's a rivalry game.
It's a big time. It's a big time rivalry.
But you know what? That's how they made their point heard. No one was paying any attention to them until they did that. So that's
right.
Why they picked that game. You know what I mean?
The kids, the players are in the right, Jimmy. The players are completely in the right to do what they did. Like, I stand behind them. I support them, you know, understanding what it is to play college football at a HBCU.
We had four coaches. They fired all of them after the ninth game and just hired one guy who hadn't coached college basketball ever. So at one point we came close to boycott. We almost boycotted a game versus South Carolina State, but we just decided not to. And I think we boycotted a practice. Washington Post were interviewing us, the Afro. I mean, it was a crazy situation. So it happened.
So this is the type of thing where, I mean, because they were also complaining about the facilities and their equipment. They posted pictures with shoulder pads, like, being overtaken by mold. I don't know if that was, like, the extreme, and they may have dug some old shoulder pads from behind the locker.
How you
just
do
to,
it?
Just for effect, but they showed, like, some pictures of that. And, you know, this is a big deal right now because, you know, down in Tampa with the Buccaneers, you know, they're going through this whole thing with staph infection and stuff like that. So, you know, they're making it seem like the locker room area is just not safe like it's supposed to be, and they're just not being treated right. Like Fred said earlier, you know, instead of flying, they're riding around 18, 19 hours on buses, and then you got to get off the bus and play football.
Where is the money going?
Sounds like
the money has to be going somewhere. Where is it going?
Pockets.
I mean, do they really have money, though?
I will say,
what's the administration?
That is a good question. I will say.
They said they had to take a cut of $75,000 off of their total, which was a couple, like, they had a couple million. I think it was their budget was in the millions, though. So there's money that is flowing to the school, you know, for the football team, but.
Yeah, but
I mean,
a couple million is not much for a football program.
For football,
I mean, I know.
But the thing and is, I will say, if you, with college football, you don't have that many, at any level, you don't have a lot of schools that actually make a profit off of it. So ultimately, a lot of these teams are operating in the red, so you have to account for that as well. But still, you should not have these problems at premier schools, no matter if they go 0-12 for 1 year or they
the money has to be accounted for.
You have to have the money has to be going somewhere, and that's where you put it on, put the onus on the administration. You have the athletic director. You have even the head coaches should have should be accountable.
You make a great point, and it's something that I don't think a lot of people are aware of. So the average college athletics program operates in the red. We hear about the ones that are in the black because obviously they're doing well and they get the fame, the notoriety or whatever. But because of the very nature of an institution of higher learning and academia and how its funding works, you shouldn't be counting on the athletics program to be in the black anyway. So that should be accounted for in your budget on a year-to-year basis to just know, all right, well, we'll come close to breaking even or we'll lose a little bit of money, but we're already getting
that
X number of dollars in the door.
That's if your administration takes sports as seriously as, you know, some other places.
And
we know some schools that don't.
Even those schools that, you know, may operate in the red that have huge football programs, it's a loss leader. They don't mind that because it's bringing so much revenue in other ways. There are several football teams that, especially these days, you hear kids and they name the college they want to go to, and it's like, I like the uniforms on the football team. And you're like, what? You're picking a school based on that? But that's what it actually boils down to, and it's been proven.
And Grambling is one of the few black schools, I think, that could count on that.
Yeah, there was a case study where they, like, looked at Oregon as well as Boise State. And when Boise State changed their field color, their enrollment went up. The football team had a little success, and their enrollment went up just based on that. In Oregon, when they changed their uniforms. So, I mean, it's proven that these small things count. And football, a lot of times, is a loss leader. So they're making money, and they can sit there and say, okay, well, the football program is not in the black, because they're making money in other ways based upon the football program. With that being said, it's just a matter of the money being accounted for, and I think that's why they come to try to, like, help these kids, because they don't want the full story to get out there. Because when you start looking
Jimmy,
at the
I ain't going front. When Oregon changed his uniforms, I would have went there.
And I have to say, I cover a lot of recruiting, and that is talking to any recruit. That is one of the big things when you mention the bigger recruits. You say, who are the schools that are on your list? And more times than not, you hear Oregon. You hear – really, Alabama is the only one that has the traditional uniforms. But you really hear – you hear Oregon. Before, you never heard Oregon. Oregon is
never
not
heard Oregon.
It's not a destination place. But because they have the connection to Nike, they have the wide-open spread offenses that everybody is running – and it's cool to play at Oregon. Chip Kelly and really helped make that as well. And one thing is also you have a winning pedigree. If you look at the teams that were like Texas, Texas gets every recruit in the state of Texas, yet they're not winning. That has something to do with other schools coming in and cherry picking the better players.
What's going to happen with Maryland with that that thing they call their new uniform, which I've heard people hate and some people love?
If I'm not mistaken, Jimmy, correct me if I'm wrong. You're talking about, because I agree with you. If this is what the point you're making, you're not talking about just recruits like to play. You're talking about enrollment.
Oh, absolutely.
Like
I'm not talking
schools,
about
right?
just
yeah.
recruits. I'm
and
talking
I,
about
I agree with that
like,
wholeheartedly, because you have 17 and 18-year-olds making these decisions, and it's like, you know, if you ask me at 17 years old, I'm like, well, I ain't going to no Boise State. I ain't going to Idaho with them country boys.
Yeah.
And then they're on TV a lot. You're like, well, you know, they are on TV a lot. Maybe I'll go out there.
Yeah, and they show them
about.
Cheerleaders. You're like, I want to be there. I get that. But the thing is, though, that's what I'm saying. A lot of times it's a lost leader. They throw this out there, and they'll put the money behind the program because – they know it's going to help their overall enrollment. But what I'm saying, getting back to the situation at Grambling, A lot of times what happens is when they pick a big game like this to kind of like, you know, rebel and it gets a national attention, they don't want the books to go out there because a lot of these guys in the athletic department, I know that outside the lines of the story on this before, when they were showing the salaries of people in athletic departments across college football, and they were saying they make more than NFL executives. They don't want this information to get leaked. So, I mean, the players were right, and they made the move at the right time to kind of get the attention they needed. So that's one thing, because Grambling still has money coming in, but where is it going?
And ultimately, sticking with Grambling, you can go at pretty much any level. It happens everywhere. It's just Grambling happened to be widely publicized there. It's the name that made it big time. If you talked about this happening somewhere like North Carolina A&T, it would still be a big story, but it wouldn't be as big. Simply put, it's Grambling. And a team that has fallen off to the wayside the last couple of years. I think they've only won like one game so far in the last two seasons, and firing their Hall of Fame head coach, having the history behind everything, you don't want to see that kind of a school go down like that. So really, yeah. That mainly it's the notoriety of the school, and yeah. Ultimately, it's a good way to put a shed a light on a lot of the things that are going on with all of these schools. And I would hope some of these other schools would take this as an example. As you might want to change things within your athletic programs,
because you know what, there's a bigger issue here that I really don't want to open up. I just want to say that I'm a product of HBCU as well as my you know, three brothers on the line. And the thing is, a lot of times we don't support our HBCUs. We just don't support them at all. We don't teach the younger generation the benefits of going to an HBCU. We kind of throw them by the wayside. So it's also up to us to support our HBCUs. I still think that they're important, even in 2013. They are important institutions.
Talking about
the rounding of America, the mixing bowl. We don't need HBCUs anymore.
I mean, that's true, but at the end of the day, I mean, we can get into a whole debate about this. The same thing kind of happened to the Negro League when they started taking the best talent and putting – but I'm not even going to open up this debate, B. Austin, because we'll be here for another 2 hours. I want to ask Fred a couple more questions before we go. He's a huge University of Miami fan. He actually, you know, goes to the games and has his press seats there. So let me ask you this question. What's going on with you and the NCAA penalties? What's going on with your team, man? What's up down there, man?
Well, I'm glad about the sanctions. I'm probably at first looking at it, I said, wow, that's it. But really, in the landscape of it, ultimately Miami got 3 years of probation, which is just basically don't do anything stupid, as well as coaches that have left that were part of the program previously. They have to have schools have to have a show cause. To show cost to the NCAA for them to actually be employed by those schools going forward, which essentially it means how can he benefit this program without us getting in trouble, as well as the basketball team received 3 scholarship losses over the next 3 years, as well as the football team. They received 3 less scholarships for the next 3 years, which for all you math geniuses, that's 9 scholarships. Ultimately, I'm really happy for this because simply Miami, they took two bowl bans as well as a conference championship bowl ban last year. And it really, they did the NCAA's work for them. And also the one thing that the recruiting, it was a recruiting tool for other schools to get players that Miami normally would get. Don't go to Miami. They have a cloud over their head. Don't go to Miami. You might not play in a bowl game for a while. That kind of stuff really hurts a recruiting class. And Al Golden has put together some pretty good classes, and right now they're still top 5 in the nation right now, regardless of what recruiting service you look at. He's really brought this team up. They were one of the worst defenses in the country last year. Personally, I felt like they were at least the worst. They couldn't stop anyone. They couldn't stop a Colt, really. And now that same defense, a lot of those guys have come back, and they're one of the top. They're at least a top 25 defense. Offensively, they've regressed a little, but this team is in the right direction. And right now, they're number 7 in the country. And that's for any other team like a Penn State, where you had a lot of scholarships taken away. You had a a coach's records completely wiped off the map. No bowls for the next 4 years. That they completely decimated that program. USC, they had the same issues with Reggie Bush, the whole Reggie Bush situation. You can talk about that for another hour. And as well as Ohio State. Ohio State, what their fans aren't realizing is Miami took bowl bans. Ohio State went undefeated and couldn't go to a bowl game because they didn't take a bowl ban the year before. When they played Arkansas, they could have taken a bowl ban. Chose not
yeah,
to.
So basically,
that's completely on them.
The gist
you're,
of it is
you're happy
Miami
they
kinda,
dodged a bullet.
What they did was they tried to make it seem as though they were cleaning up in house. They put punishment on themselves,
right.
So the NCAA was a little bit lenient on them.
There was also a little bit of some dirty dealing on the side of the NCAA where their lawyers were going in, and the NCAA has not been very credible in the last at least 3 or 4 years. And they're not the same across the board when they're giving out their punishments. You had recordings come out where lawyers were paying off guys to get information, things like that. And when the NCAA gets caught with their hand in the cookie jar, they really had to to cover their own selves.
They're just like a dishonest organization. Somebody needs to come clean up, like the NCAA. Like, what's going on? Like, it's crazy. It's crazy, y'all.
Either clean it up or put me down.
they need to put Rudy Giuliani in charge of NCAA. Give him about a good 3-4 years. Giuliani clean him up.
And
on the payroll.
What boggles me about the NCAA simply is the NCAA, they have their biases. You have you suspend AJ Green for multiple games for selling a jersey that's his, but yet Johnny Manziel gets a half a game against a team in Rice, who they're an okay team, but they're not a great team, for signing autographs and then selling them.
You know why that is. Never mind, I'm not going to get into that. Anyway, Fred, let's move on before I say something that I shouldn't. Give us a couple games, real quick about this weekend, some games coming that we should look out for.
Well, I have six games. I'll give you two to break down. Right now I have Alabama-Tennessee. That's going to be one of the biggest games in the SEC. Simply put, Tennessee-Alabama is one of the biggest rivalries in the conference. Alabama, really, no one's talking about Alabama right now. They're just chugging along at number one. This game this week between these two teams has the most NFL talent available. In my eyes, you have Tennessee's whole offensive line will more than likely be drafted at least in the top four rounds. Alabama, their defense is finally coming around, but offensively you have A.J. McCarron, T.J. Yeldon. Amari Cooper hasn't done what I thought he would, which I've kind of soured on him after his freshman season. You also have a guy in Kenyon Drake, at running back, who coincidentally I saw him in the spring, and I said, man, that guy looks pretty good. I might want to keep an eye on him. Coincidentally, he has 400 yards already. Number two on the roster, rushing the football. This team is so balanced. AJ McCarron has three interceptions going forward, 14 touchdowns, 1,500 yards, and he was my front runner for the Heisman to start the season. Simply put, the Heisman Trophy is a quarterback award, and really and truly, best quarterback on the best team typically wins it, but. Alabama quarterbacks, I'm convinced they're not going to win it all when it comes to a Heisman. Another game I have for you guys is Vanderbilt going up against Texas A&M. You have Johnny Manziel, a guy that they just lost, and he put up big numbers, but he's shown a little couple injuries the last couple games. And knee sprain, an elbow, shoulder type of injury. He's a smaller quarterback, and don't take away from his talent, but I really think that might hurt him going forward. A guy that you want to watch for on the Vanderbilt side is Jordan Matthews, a cousin, if I remember correctly, he's the third cousin of Jerry Rice, and he's got a good chance of being a pretty good player going into the NFL. You also have the big game, UCLA going up against Oregon. If you really like seeing up-tempo offenses, Just a lot of up and down the field. That's going to be a game you want to watch. DeAnthony Thomas is coming back for this week after suffering an ankle injury. Oregon still just destroying teams, and it's just not even fair. This team is basically like playing basketball on grass. Marcus Mariota may have jumped Teddy Bridgewater as far as the number one quarterback discussion is concerned. 6'4", 225, can run, can throw. Mariota really has impressed me throughout the season. And this defense for Oregon, everyone talks about the offense for Oregon, but outside of the uniforms, which really just I'm always interested in what they're going to wear week in and week out. But this defense, they really just lock teams up in the secondary, and the Pac-12, they're a throwing league, and yet they can stop the pass, and that's what really changes things for this Oregon team. And last but not least, I have South Carolina going up against Missouri. South Carolina coming in at number 21. Missouri coming in at number 5 in the BCS rankings. Missouri, quarterback goes down, no problem. Matty Mock comes in, freshman quarterback. His dad's a coach in high school coming up. Matty Mock is a freshman, but he doesn't play like a freshman. He's a shorter guy, but he can throw the deep ball. South Carolina, the question I have for them is can Jadeveon Clowney really get some pressure on this guy? And for Missouri, they have two bookend defensive ends that can get pressure all day long. But South Carolina, their quarterback, Connor Shaw, got hurt last week after coming back from an injury. Dylan Thompson, more of a thrower than a runner. Connor Shaw, more of the runner than the thrower. Really, South Carolina is going to be fine. They have a running game that is one of the tops in the country under Mike Davis at running back. I really like what South Carolina has on the road. I think they can win one just coming away, probably a 3-point game to win it in the end.
Okay, cool. I mean, I'm sitting here writing these games down to make sure that I take a look at all of these games.
You're making sure so you can get to the casino?
I just find it interesting, like, how things work out. Because, you know, I told you last week I was so excited about that game where Florida State just completely obliterated Clemson, man. Like, that wasn't what I was
looking
forward
to. Can I just say, Florida State is so disrespectful with it. Florida State has a sod graveyard. They take a piece of sod from every stadium they play on the road, and they take it back to Tallahassee and bury it. So,
now, before we get you out of here, I just want to ask you, with Florida State being as good as they can they compete with the SEC team?
Wow. the body of work, they really haven't played anyone. Clemson was a decent team, but this Florida State team feels so much different than the last few years. So I'm going to say yes. The lore of the SEC is the SEC is kind of down this year. Georgia, lots of injuries. Tennessee, lots of injuries. Florida, lots of injuries. LSU can't stop anyone, but they can score. And Alabama just is the only – they're not even the most complete team. I would love to see a matchup between Florida State and Alabama, simply put, the chess match between former Nick Saban, the master, Jimbo Fisher, the understudy. They were all on the same coaching staffs at some point in their careers. Nick Saban brought in Will Muschamp as well, the Florida head coach, as well as Jimbo Fisher, the Florida State head coach. That would be a great matchup. And Nick Saban with plenty of time, that would be just such a good matchup. I'm kind of rooting for it to happen just to bring Florida State back down to earth a little bit. But Jameis.
that they can compete with whoever you're down to earth. We got you. Before we get you out of here, tell our listeners how they can read your work and see everything that you do in terms of football, because you write about college as well as the pros. How can everybody find you online? Give us your website as well as your Twitter.
You guys can reach me at heavyinthegames.com. You can follow me personally on Twitter at FProduceSports, and you can follow Heavy in the Games on Twitter at Heavy in the Games.
Absolutely. We look forward to talking to you later on after these games and this upcoming college football weekend. We'll talk to you again next week on the War Room. Thanks, Mr.
All right, guys.
Thanks. All right, take it easy.
All right, Fred.
Absolutely, man. Fred
Perdue, everybody.
College football is where is that this year?
Yeah. I mean, you got somebody, that comes on weekly and breaks it down like that, it can get interesting for you.
Yeah. Yo, Fred knows his stuff, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. All right, B. Austin, you want to tell everybody real quick how to get in contact with us?
Absolutely. Everybody, as Dev referenced, check out our website at warroomsports.com to call in and speak with us about any of today's topics. Dial the Digital Extreme Technologies hotline at 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. What's going on in the chat room?
Nothing much. So right now we're going to we're going to get right into some hot topics. Jimmy, hot topics are brought to you by
Audible. If your schedule is too hectic to read as much as you want, try audiobooks and kick back and let someone else do the reading for you. Visit audibletrial.com/warroomsports. Listen, Audible is the greatest thing. Me, Dev, and Q had a conversation about it this past week. I just added some great sports books to my wish list because my wish list is Diesel. Just finishing up a couple new books, one, The Power of Habit. I'm trying to get down with a new Malcolm Gladwell book. I know Kill already got it. You got that on Audible, right, Kill?
Yes, sir. David and Goliath, and I finished it in 36 hours.
Exactly. Your Audible is the truth, but listen, you get a free book, so any of the books we mentioned, go to audibletrial.com/warroomsports, and you can get a free book. If you don't like it after that, cancel. If you do like it, continue to get your books on a monthly basis. That being said, Dev, let's talk about these hot topics.
All right, the World Series began last night, of course. That's one thing, you know, we couldn't get our picks in. We should have done something on War Room Sports TV. But real quick, you know, even though the Sox are already up 1-0, who did you guys have prior to the series starting? Because we didn't get our picks out into the public. Jimmy, who did you have
in
the World Series?
I had the Sox winning. I definitely had the Sox winning. It's crazy to see Boston win championships like this over the last decade, considering my entire life as a child. They were like the laughing stock of baseball. But, you know, it is what it is. They got their farm system, the team built up. I think they're going to win another championship.
I had the Cardinals winning in 7. B. Austin, who'd you have?
I got the Sox.
The Sox.
I got the Sox.
Boston. And, Kill, who'd you have prior to the series starting?
Prior to the series beginning, I had the Philadelphia Phillies. No, I'm just playing. But on our page, the night of the game, I posted that in one of the comments that I chose the Cardinals to win in 6, St. Louis.
Okay. So we all know what happened in game 1. I think the Cardinals in the beginning of that game just had some mental breakdowns that kind of just made the game spiral out of control. They had the one thing where the pitcher called the pop-up, and nobody caught it. Like, he called for it. Two guys were right there for it. They let the ball hit the ground. And then you had the big play with Cosma at second base where he tried to get the tag to start the double play, but he never really caught the ball. And at first the umpire called it out at second base, but then the umps actually got together, reversed the call, made the right call. I think everybody in St. Louis probably went crazy, but I think that was the right call. Did any of you guys see that?
Yeah, I definitely did. It was the right call. And it's just amazing to see people make these kind of mistakes knowing they've already played like 200 games.
Yeah, so.
It was happy to be here. Thank you to meet you.
All right, so game 2, is it, you know, do you guys have, because I know some of you picked the Red Sox, do you have the Sox going up 2-0, Jimmy, or?
Yes, I do. I have the Sox. No, I actually have the Sox going up 2-0. I have the Sox winning this series in 6 games, possibly 5.
Wow.
It's all about Shane Victorino, yo.
All right. I think the Cardinals are going to make it interesting. So, you know, I think the Cardinals are going to win game 2. Make the series a little bit more interesting than the ones that we've seen in the past decade or so. Kill, who you got winning game 2?
Man, I have the Cardinals, man. The Cardinals have to win 1 at home to make it in 6. I have 1 on the road to win in 6.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, you did say 6, so they definitely, they would definitely have to win.
It's all about Shane Victorino.
Sox
Sox Cardinals game two.
They can't play as bad as they did last game, so I'm going to give the Cardinals this game.
Okay.
Still got
right,
the Sox.
We'll see what happens in that. NBA, our 76ers. Well, me and B. Austin, 76ers. Jimmy got hometown love for the Sixers, but he's a Lakers fan. But Nerlens Noel, there's reports that the Sixers plan to shut him down for the entire season. We already knew his rehab was probably going to take a little more than half the season. But now they're planning on maybe shutting him down for the entire season. Do you guys think that's a good idea by the Sixers?
Stink for Wiggins.
What are the chances that we get Wiggins?
I mean, I don't really know if Nerlens Noel playing or not is going to affect how bad they are this season. But I do think, as a Sixers fan especially, I think it's a very good move. We all know that the Sixers, they're not going to show it on the court. It's going to look like it just because they're that bad, but they're not going to show that they're tanking. But I think the organization is okay with basically having a bad year so they can try to get some of the top talent in this upcoming draft, which is a
very
talented draft.
Could you imagine if they somehow got Wiggins and then you bring Noel in, who, you know, could have been a top pick of this draft? You talk about a brand-new start. I mean – you know, it is
and
what it is.
And that's the thing with him. I think they're more worried about his health, you know, since they're going to be trotting out a young team the following season, you know, a young, talented team. It's really no use for him to come back for a half a season. What they do plan to do is to keep him traveling with the team, keep him, you know, practicing.
Engaged.
During his rehab, definitely engaged. He's going to be in all the meetings. So he's going to learn basketball. He's not just going to be sitting out there, you know, doing, you know, rehabbing and twiddling his thumbs. During this whole process, you know, Coach Brown says he's really going to make sure this guy learns basketball so he'll be ready to step in and contribute right away next season when he is playing. So I think it's a very good idea, you know, because the Sixers really don't have anything to win or lose at this point. So
just a quick FYI, this is the reason why that whole one-and-done rule in college basketball is so stupid. Wiggins would have been the first pick of this year's draft, you know?
Right.
But anyway, basically. Go ahead.
All right,
it's a good, smart move. Go ahead.
They're in a rebuilding mode. You know, you got the young point guard. You still got Jimmy's favorite player there, Evan Turner. Man, if we thought last year was a year where he had to go out and prove himself, like this year, like Evan Turner has to be one of the best players on this bad team this season. If not, I think they're just going to end up moving on from him. He has his moments. He's just so inconsistent, man. He's so inconsistent.
He has 60 season tickets on Living Social, yo.
Yeah.
Yo, why you be dissing me?
They had a very, very empty. I mean, it's just the preseason, so it's gonna be empty for the most part anyway. But what you saw last night in the building is gonna be similar to what you see probably starting
the
second
night.
Week of the season. Now, opening night, I don't foresee a sellout, but at the same time, actually I do because their home opener is against the Miami Heat. So that's going to be a sellout.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe a few people will trample into the building for maybe the first two or three games just to see how bad they're going to be. But come week two, there's going to be a ghost town in there. So, you know.
Jimmy, why you be dissing me? I'm nice.
All right. more stuff in the NBA. The NBA Finals format, and this has nothing to do with the 76ers because they won't see these for another 10, 20 years. But the NBA Finals format is going back to 2-2-1-1-1. We know for the past 30 years almost, well, since 1985, not 30, it's been 2-3-2. And a big reason they changed it back in 1985 is because the Celtics and the Lakers kept meeting up in the finals, and Red Auerbach was complaining about cross-country travel in that 2-2-1-1-1 format. You know, that's a lot of, especially back in those times. So what do you guys think about them switching it back, or did you enjoy the 2-3-2 format in the finals?
I saw some of the arguments on our web, on our Facebook page. I like it better this way.
There was one that really made no sense. Dude just kept talking.
People were going off. People said they liked the fact they liked the fact that you give the underdogs a better chance by having three games consecutively. I'm like, yo, they're the underdogs for a reason. You play all season.
Yo, you're not supposed to make it easier for them.
Yo, you're definitely not supposed to. I mean, I don't know why someone would say something like that. Like, who? Why are you making it easier for a team? Like,
yo,
the team
for the same reason that people complain about kids bullying when they win by 90 points.
When they were on Facebook on our page, they probably was up there like. But anyway, I like this better. I like this one better.
Yeah, and plus, I mean, it's uniformity. Like, why would the quarterfinals, semifinals, conference finals all be 2-2-1-1-1, and then you get to the NBA finals and you change the format? So it really doesn't make any sense to have that three games in the middle, because for the underdog team, because if they win one of those first two on the road, then it's a really tense situation for that other team, especially if you happen to run into a team that's really good at home. So if they steal that one at home and they get three in the middle, you might not ever come back. I mean, we haven't seen situations like that play out, because the favorite always finds a way to win one at least during that three-game stretch, but it's still principle. You shouldn't be giving advantages to somebody who didn't earn it. I mean, they are in the NBA Finals, so their record may not have been too much worse than another team, but you play 82 games for a reason. Like, we get bored with the regular season sometimes, but, you know, if you do all of that and you get the home court advantage, then you should have the home court advantage. So
absolutely.
I'm good with it.
Absolutely.
And it was a unanimous vote by the owners, by the way. So.
Yeah, I think it should have been overturned, that rule. I mean, I always thought it didn't make any sense at all. I understand where they were coming from, the whole Laker-Boston thing, but even still, you shouldn't have changed it. So it should have never been like that, so I'm glad that they corrected themselves.
And then even in a situation, Kill, where the favorite is still pounding on the team, the underdog, it's a situation where even if you win the first two at home and you win the next two there, like, you get a better chance in a 2-2-1-1-1 format to celebrate in your building if it comes to that. You know, I don't think that's a big deal. I think people just want to win the championship. But, you know, just to throw another little caveat in there, you know, even if the favorite is doing what it's supposed to do and just pounding his team out, it gets kind of weird where these teams are never getting the chance to celebrate in their own building. You leave after those two games and your fans never see you again until the parade.
Absolutely, I totally agree.
You saying something, B. Austin? Well, let's talk real quick.
Good luck.
Because we've been talking a lot lately about the ESPN NBA player rankings, and they finally did the top five players in the league. And in order, the top five players in the league, according to ESPN, are LeBron James, Kevin Durant, Chris Paul, James Harden, and Russell Westbrook. Any disagreement with any of those? I heard B. Austin.
Three mistakes.
Saying, correct.
Dang, he said three mistakes.
No, I said correct, and then I see three mistakes.
Oh, okay. I thought you agreed with Chris Paul. I would say that. I don't see Chris Paul being the third best player in the league.
Yeah, he's not the third best player in the world. Bron is correct, obviously. Kevin Durant is correct. That's pretty obvious. I think leaving Melo out of this top five is sort of egregious. But the thing that bothers me most is Harden and Westbrook's names. And mind you, these are two of my favorites. My favorite current players are Harden and Westbrook. Like, I love to watch those dudes get down, but they're not top five yet.
Yeah, Harden's not better than Paul George, in my opinion. I don't think Harden's better than Paul George.
Ooh. That's a big
not as an all-around player, he's not.
You're right.
A lot of people, because I also think Carmelo Anthony should be in the top five somewhere, but the debates that we've seen sparked about this, everybody mentions Carmelo on the other side of the ball not playing much defense. But
and James Harden plays.
James Harden hasn't really proven to be a staunch defender. Kevin Durant has his moments, like because of his length when he has to, he plays defense. But Kevin Durant really hasn't, made his name on the defensive end yet either. But he is that talented of a player where that probably doesn't matter in his ranking. But I also think Carmelo is that talented of a player to where his,
right.
Defensive efforts may not, keep him from being a top five player in the NBA. So
what's funny is the only time you hear about Durant and Melo playing defense is when they face Kobe in the playoffs and they had to check Kobe. That's the only time you heard about them playing defense.
So that's the only time they really have to in this league.
my eye test, as Dev kind of alluded to, Kevin Durant plays a little bit of defense. He plays more defense than Harden, and I know because I watch Harden. I really enjoy seeing him play, but he's in a situation and really always has been where he doesn't have to play D, and he's not forced to play D. And in Houston, he's not going to play D because he has so much other stuff to do. He's not checking the team's best perimeter scorer.
No, he does put the effort forth. Like watching him play this past season, he put a hell of an effort forth trying to play defense. Do I think he's a great defender? No, but I think he's getting better and he's putting forth the effort. And the thing is, Harden is nice because I know I see a lot of times where he gets people like disheartened, and they still always point to the finals game. But Harden is a hell of a player. The thing about this list here, not that I necessarily agree with all the picks, but I can make the argument for all the picks. Like it's arguable. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good list. I don't think it's the best possible list, but I really don't have a problem with it. Like, when you said I have three problems, I don't have a problem with it. Like, you can make an argument for Melo.
I think I have a little bit of a problem with it as well. And I'm just like you guys. I think James Harden is a hell of a player. I think, with the little bit of a sample that we have on James Harden, I think the James Harden love in basketball circles has maybe gone a little overboard because it's not his fault. He hasn't even gotten a chance yet to show that he's consistently going to be on this level, but everybody already wants to put him on the level of being a top five player in the league. I don't think he's made it that far up the ladder yet.
But when you read the article giving the top players, it's based on right now using last season. It has nothing to do with body of work or anything. It's like right now. Basically,
I know, but nothing tells me right now that James Harden's a top five player in the league. You still have to use the last of what you saw him. You still have to use last season, and he had a hell of a season.
But he didn't have a top five player.
Last
year, who were the top five players based on last year's performance and statistics?
I mean, because you still have to, if they're just basing it on stats, then that's one thing, but. You still have to make some kind of a difference with this. Now, I'm not saying he wasn't a difference maker. I'm not saying that at all.
Wade was better than Harden stat wise. If we go, Dwayne Wade was better than Harden. If we want to go by stats, player efficiency.
And we had this talk. Well, actually, I wasn't on the show with you guys when you talked about it. When Dwayne Wade got a little upset at Kevin Durant about that. I still think a healthy Dwayne Wade is better than James Harden. His statistics may take a little bit of a hit because he's playing with LeBron and such a talented team down there, Chris Bosh, things like that. I think a healthy Dwayne Wade is still better than James Harden. I think,
Yeah. I mean, last year, D Wade was 21-5-5. Harden was 26-5-5.
But D Wade's
efficiency was higher than Harden.
Harden had the ultimate green light.
But Kill also, if you want to like break that down even further, part of that is because D Wade plays with a LeBron James.
So if he did play with LeBron, he would have averaged like 30 or 27.
No, he would have averaged more points. But I'm talking about in terms of his efficiency and how he's able to operate on the court. He's playing with the Bosh and the James. That kind of, Harden has the green light. Of course, he's going to score 26 points. But I mean, he also put up like five dimes, grabbed five boards. His three-point percentage was okay. Like, he had a great season last year. And if you're going
I just don't think he's a – no matter what formula that they use or anybody try to use, I don't think James Harden at this moment
is a top five player in the NBA. I think he's on his way if he keeps doing what he's doing, you know.
It's all a matter of
so how do you feel about Melo, you know, being left out with the context of Harden and Westbrook being 4 and 5?
Well, to me, it's one of those things where there only can be 5 players on here. And I thought Melo, I made an argument for Melo in terms of the MVP, and even though I thought LeBron did deserve the win. But I'm not really upset with the list as you are. I mean, I can see the argument for Melo. I can see the argument for Wade. But at the same time, I just don't have a problem with the list. Like I'm saying, it's not that I necessarily agree completely with the list, but I don't have a problem with it. I can see why these guys are voted the top five. You had a problem also with Westbrook.
Yeah, I think that you insert Melo at 3 or 4. You move CP3 back to maybe is CP3 the fifth best player in the league? Maybe. You know,
Here's the thing, because at the end of the day, now if Derrick Rose wasn't injured, where does he fall at? But again, this is not based upon body of work. This is based upon as the performance from last season. So
yeah, because there are a lot of Derrick Rose defenders who are saying, you know, how Westbrook on, you know, Rose, he was injured too, but actually Westbrook played the whole season. He got injured in the playoffs. Like we haven't seen Derrick Rose play since the 76ers series. The year before, so I can understand that, because even when healthy, you know, you can still make an argument of who's better between Westbrook and Rose. In my opinion,
I agree. Rose may get the nod. You may be the only people, Dad, because if we put that up as a versus, people will kill us
Rose ain't even close. Why is this a question? What the real question, people always want to tell us what the real question should be.
Derrick Rose has a lot of – the support for Derrick Rose is crazy. Like,
because Derrick Rose is a humble guy, and he's marketed, and Westbrook has a little bit of that asshole edge, and he's seen as selfish. And
why? Because he said y'all tripping?
When I looked at the two of them, and I'm not even saying who's the better out of them. This isn't who's better, but when I look at them, I prefer Westbrook over Rose. And I don't necessarily think he's better, but I take Westbrook.
Right. I see what you're saying. Maybe like a style thing. You might.
But
if you think about point guards in this league, their styles are, you know, as close to each other as anybody.
I mean,
he's also an androgynous
dresser, so they may.
Yeah, now, when we get there, he loses points. There's two things with Westbrook, though, Dev. One is defense. I think he's a better defender than Rose. And I've seen Derrick Rose trick off wins at the end of games and go to the foul line. I think that Westbrook has that killer. I think he's not going to miss those shots.
Killer.
I just feel he's a little more clutch than Rose.
And Austin and Dev, speaking of Westbrook, I was on the internet doing some research, and I think our homie Reggie Morris that played at Howard with me coached Westbrook in high school. He also coached Darrell Wright, but I believe he coached Russell Westbrook in high school. Kind of crazy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Reg.
Anyway.
All right. Well, let's move on. We got about 20 minutes left in the show, and
20 minutes
probably,
of NFL talk.
They probably show up at our houses like Matt Schaub if we don't talk about NFL. So
for those who don't know, man, basketball is La Cultura Nostra. That's this thing of ours, and we are excited that basketball season is upon us. If you couldn't tell, we are ready for midseason form of an argument.
We say that though, we're gonna be excited until it actually starts and the product.
Yeah, then
we're
gonna be excited again
during
the All-Star break. After we see a couple games of how bad the play's gonna be, we're excited the All-Star game. Anyway, with that being said, it's time to talk football. Football, the NFL Wrap is brought to you by Stitcher Smart Radio. You can now hear our show, The War Room, on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your computer, your iPhone, your Android phone. And if you happen to have a BlackBerry or Palm phone, you can still listen, but you probably want to upgrade your phone, especially since BBM is now available on iPhone and Android. Why would you even want a BlackBerry at this point? The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed and no memory or storage wasted. Downloading is easy. Click on the Stitcher logo on our website or, like I said, stitcher.com/thewarroom. It's one word. Enter the promo code, The War Room, because this will enter you into a contest and you can win money, and everybody loves money. We know that.
Jimmy,
gentlemen,
can I ask you a question? Jimmy, can I ask you
absolutely.
A question? What, speaking of BBM, why do I keep getting all these updates about BBM coming to Android and app? Like, why does that even matter anymore?
Yeah,
well,
you got, like, GroupMe, you got...
Yeah, here's the thing, because BBM has a reputation. BBM was the first of its kind, and it actually still works better than every other client. And
it's,
if you think
got
about
a cult following.
It definitely has a cult following, and BlackBerry kind of missed out on making a gazillion dollars because BBM was literally the first social network. Like, this is before Facebook. You can have groups. You can, it's sort of just like what we do on GroupMe, but it's, you know, they missed out on that. They would have made this for Android and iPhone from the gate. They would have probably been at the top of the food chain. But with that being said, football, I have to ask you, gentlemen, Dev, specifically you. I know you're a fantasy football player like me. In one of my leagues, somebody just offered me a trade. I want to know what you think about this. They want to trade me Julius Thomas for my beloved Broncos for Jordy Nelson. Should I say yes?
I'd probably do that. Peyton targets that dude at least
exactly
twice.
I was thinking
once
it's a joke. I'm like, why would you offer
me? To the red zone. Yeah.
I thought maybe something happened.
That.
I didn't know. Like, he tore it. You know, people think you're stupid in fantasy, so they're like, wait till somebody gets injured and then offer him to you. I'm like, did I miss something? Because why would you even offer me Julius Thomas? And the crazy part is that the guy offering me Julius Thomas, his quarterback is Peyton Manning. So I'm like, why the hell are you offering me Julius Thomas?
So he could get, like, double the point. Yo, he targets the dude every time they get down there. Like, once they get down there, I know that I'm probably going to get some points.
Yeah,
Julius Thomas
now,
will change his last name to Manning. He's like his son.
But here's my only issue with that, Dev. On my team currently, I already have Demaryius Thomas. So should I make the trade and have two dudes from...
Oh, then you're going to have... Then you're going to be putting all your eggs in one basket type thing.
Yeah.
It's like
anyway,
the Broncos have a terrible offensive game all of a sudden, and you get nothing from nobody.
Yeah, I'm ass out. Yeah. I'm still doing it, though. Anyway, I can't turn that down, good brother. With that being said, let's jump into real football outside of fantasy. Week 7 looked like an NFL mash unit, yo. It looked like the Red Wedding for my Game of Thrones people out there, because it was injuries all over the place. Reggie Wayne, torn ACL. Doug Martin, torn labrum. Brian Christian, broken fibula. And a torn
LCL.
Sure, Michael Finley has a bruised spinal cord.
Michael Finley almost
has
died.
A torn ACL. Yo, what's going on?
It was crazy. Week 7 was a bad week because, you know, all of these injuries you're naming are big names, and they're out for the season. So this is going to impact some teams. Like, we talked about Reggie Wayne on our last episode of Field Vision on War Room Sports TV. And, you know, the Colts seem to just really be coming into their own. Reggie is a guy that you need because they do have some other talented guys out there on the edge. But like one of you guys were saying on the show, you know, Reggie's that reliable guy, that guy who's on third down, he's going to make the difficult catch. And I don't know if T.Y. Hilton, and I know for sure that Hayward Bay is not ready for that kind of, you know, that kind of pressure.
Hayward Bay is just not
going
to make the catch.
He ain't about that life.
So,
I wonder what my homie Dr. Bennett Amola has to say about this, because you know, he already feels the NFL is too dangerous of a sport.
Right. But he probably got something to say about the whole JerMichael Finley thing, because he was on the field lying motionless for about 6 minutes before they carted him off and took him to the hospital. He's in the hospital now. People are saying when they visit him, he's like, when can I get back on the field? Like, dude's crazy.
Yeah, he they say that he lost sensation in some of his extremities, and he didn't regain it until the hospital. If you have a bruised spinal cord, you might want to consider a new profession. That's a tough thing. I'd be worried about what side effects would be coming back from that.
Yo, hold up. So imagine you about to go play some. He's about to play basketball. And they're like, hold up, dog. I just got to stretch out my spinal cord because I had this injury. You know, I just got to make sure my spinal cord all right.
Yeah, stretch out your spinal cord.
I feel kind of sorry for Brian Cushing because, you know, he just came back off an ACL injury. Now he's out, broken fibula in the LCL, so he's going for the season.
Remember, we talked about players never tearing their LCL. It would have to be so awkward, and this happened in his case.
And
he's just going to get back to using the things that he used to get him where he is.
No comment.
The only thing about it, though, like Houston isn't in that position like they were in last year. So it's not like losing Brian Cushing is like that big of a blow because we have a Super Bowl team here. And, yeah, like they're not what they're supposed to be. So they didn't
Houston
just lose.
Houston about to be like the NFC. They're about to be like the NFC East.
They didn't lose, like, their last piece to try to win the Super Bowl. I mean, they have a pretty good defense, and he is one of the leaders of that defense, but it's probably not going to matter much.
Sam Bradford, a.k.a. Check Down Charlie, tore his ACL, and when he fell, it didn't even look like anything happened. That was like just a regular fall.
Did you see the defender? Did you see the defender get hyped after he pushed him out of bounds, and then he was, like, you know, I guess praising
like,
himself?
Yeah, but my thing is, yo, and that's the thing about these injuries. You just never know because that looked like a routine fall. It was nothing special about that play other than the fact he didn't get right up. You know?
Right.
Crazy, man.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And Doug Martin thinks that he's coming back from his – he says his shoulder injury isn't as bad. But back to the Sam Bradford thing because, you know, his injury probably brought about one of the most interesting stories of the week.
Absolutely.
Jimmy's homie. Jimmy's homie got a call this week.
The Rams called Brett Favre after Sam Bradford went down. Just to see if he could play. You know, they just wanted to inquire and see what he thought.
They called a 44-year-old grandpa.
He's a high school coach right now.
He's a kid. He's better than who?
He's better than what they have in Minnesota and in Cleveland.
No, but see, but that's what makes this story so interesting. It's like, is the quarterback play in the NFL at this very moment that bad that when somebody goes down, you know, you can't pick from a crop of the guys that you actually have on your team as backups, or you can't pick from a crop of people who are still out there on the waiver wire trying to get a job? I keep hearing the name from a bunch of fans, Vince Young. There's a lot of people who ride for Vince Young. And they're wondering
there's
why
a lot of people
he didn't get a call.
Way better than Vince Young. He's way better.
First of all, people should realize that Vince Young is not going to get a call. he's not going to get a call, especially in St. Louis because Jeff Fisher's there, and we already know how their relationship ended. So,
there's another older.
Vince Young sucks as a passer. At least Favre can throw.
Yo, there's another older gentleman. There's another older gentleman that's soliciting his services and shooting his resume around, and that's Jeff Garcia.
He called Cleveland this week telling them that, you know, he's available. Funny thing about that is Jason Campbell, who's been skipped over all season in Cleveland, is finally going to get the chance to start because Whedon just hasn't cut it since he's been back in the lineup. I don't know. It's
to your point though, Dev, about
Garcia?
Quarterback play. Well, I don't know. I think Garcia actually would be a better option than Brett Favre. I don't know. There's something about Garcia. I think he's keeping in some sort of shape. I just get the sense that Brett Favre, even though he claims he's on his Iron Man workout thing, I can see him chugging beer like all day.
Here's the thing, though. I've actually seen
Brett Favre speak,
and there are people that said he's in the best shape of his life. They said that Brett Favre actually bikes 35 miles a day and also runs 5 miles a day. But here's the thing, though. Here's the thing about
that. Brett
admitted this. He was on TV on the NFL Network. He said, yes, he does. He picked up biking, and he does bike 35 miles a day or whatever, but he said he's in no football shape. He said he's in – you know, healthy to be a 44-year-old
shape. Kid. Like you look at him,
he
and you're
like,
damn,
but I'm not in shape to get hit by no 300-pound man running like a 4-4.
Yeah, I saw him say that. Dev, to your point about the quarterback play, I think it's a combination of these young men coming into the league, not really developing their skills, and also the number of passing centric offenses we're seeing and the way they're dropping back quarterbacks and the complexity of these passing schemes, it's exposing these guys who aren't really ready to be in the driver's seat or have the keys to these offenses.
So basically,
and I even see that in some of the starters.
So basically we're just saying these teams are holding backups, you know, second and third stringers, but they really, really don't trust the guys. They're hoping they don't have to go to those guys because before they go to those guys, they're going to give some people sitting on their couch a call before they actually
Because I agree with the offense.
Some of these guys
don't
know the offense outside of being a scout team dummy or a practice guy, and so they're on the roster as a body, but when you go down, the guys behind you aren't.
They know the offense more than Brett Favre sitting on the couch. I mean,
I guess he's a
veteran. He has a propensity to learn quicker, but I don't know.
I think part of that was a publicity stunt, but I also think that, B. Austin, I agree with you completely. It's the passing-centric offenses. And these guys, like coaches these days, are just pass-happy. Instead of bringing a guy in, even a young guy, and allowing him to manage a game and try to win the football game that way, you got a guy
who's going
to
run the ball
40 times a game. Josh Freeman been on your team 3 hours. He throws the ball 58 times. Brandon Weeden had a game earlier where he threw the ball 53 times. It's like, it's just out of control. The running back is becoming an antiquated position. Running backs don't get drafted anymore. They put wide receivers at running back. And the NFL is completely changing.
Before, like 5 years ago, if you told me a quarterback dropped back 53 to 58 times, in my mind, I would think, okay, it was Dan Marino and they were losing. Like, I wouldn't even think of dropping a bum back more than 30 times in an NFL game. Like, why would you drop a bum back 50 times? What's the point?
This is what happens.
That's just more chances of error.
Yeah, Josh was 20 of 53, and he'd been on the team like a week and a half.
That's what I'm saying.
Passes.
You got these guys, 53 passes. He doesn't even know the playbook or the plays at this
like,
point, and this is what I'm saying.
In the
You're not putting him in a position
situation,
to win.
I'm not dropping Josh Freeman back 58 times. Like, I don't care if he knows the playbook. He's been, like, so, and Leslie Frazier, why are you dropping Josh Freeman back when you have the original black man on your team? Like, why?
Did you watch that game? There was no running room for the original black man. I'm not saying
they put 46 people in the box. I get that.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's justifying it. Because, like I told you guys, I think they conceded the game way before the game was out of hand. And it was just a glorified practice session. I think they were giving his reps on the field that night.
And I'm not even talking about just that game. I'm talking about in general when you watch around the
league.
It's a lot of pass happy.
Except when you watch Carolina play, because Carolina refuses to let them play. They want to run the ball into they have the worst coaching staff, I think, in the league. Carolina gets this thing, and I hope they don't do that on a national game tonight. But first down, they run a halfback dive where it's like negative 1 yard. Then they get a 3 yard gain with another halfback dive. And now they're in like third and seven all day long. And then they tell Cam to go rescue inside of third and long every drive.
But that's a part of, Jimmy, that's a part of the problem. I'm cool. Maybe Carolina just isn't that good with their run game. I'm cool with the strategy. Like, why drop Cam back 45 times?
No. What I'm saying is they don't allow him to play at all. Like, even if you drop him back 20 times, mix it up. They do the same thing. Yo, toss, off tackle. All right, now we at third and nine, bail us out. Then they have to punt to get it back. Halfback dive. All right, now we at third and eight. You know, it's like, yo, it's...
The sad thing about them is their defense is great.
Yeah. But anyway, how the hell we got talking about Carolina? I have no clue, but this is what happens when we talk football. We were talking about what's going on with all these quarterbacks and Brett Favre coming back. Now, this next story real quick is about Dez Bryant and Megatron. I read the article. I didn't read the article. I read the headline. I told the dev, and he was like, Dev didn't even say that. The headline I read said, Dez Bryant says he's better than Calvin Johnson. That's not what he said.
Like I told you, I'm a little sensitive to that because, you know, I've been in a situation where I've been misquoted by a news source, and it's going.
Damn,
so
sure
Dez. Dez has been on the defensive all week because it really wasn't what he said. I have his quotes, some of his quotes right here. When they asked him about Calvin Johnson, the first thing he said is, like, I don't compare myself to anybody. But, you know, he went on and said, I believe I can do whatever he can do. I think it's just a pride thing. When it comes to football, just being on the field, it's a mindset and having a mentality. I honestly believe when I'm out there, I'll be feeling like there's nothing I can't do. Whatever the coaches ask me to do, I'm going to do it. Man, there was so much backlash from fans.
That is
even,
a completely different statement. That's a completely different statement than what the article I read. And this is the thing about, like, journalism and also blogging.
Shock jocking.
So people write whatever. Yeah, they try to get you just to read the article. The thing is, I read so many articles that half the time I just read the headline.
Right.
I'm like, damn, you heard what Dad said? Dad said he was better than Calvin.
Yeah, so he basically, he said, you know, if he didn't say what he really said, we'd all be asking him, like, damn, like, where's your pride? Like, how are you just going to go out there and act like, you
right.
know, this dude is just
right.
so much greater than you? But, you know, Nate Burleson chimed in when he heard the comments, but
Richard
in his, you know, to giving him the benefit of the doubt right now, who knows how they may have presented it to Nate Burleson. They may have presented it to him like the article presented it to Jimmy. Like, oh, yeah, he said he's better than Calvin. But Nate said, listen, I like Dez. I think he's one of the best receivers in the game right now. Very talented, fast, big, strong. He possesses all the tools to possibly be as good as Calvin, but he's no – but he's not Calvin Johnson, no way, no how. Sorry, Dez, keep it real. And Nate went on to say some other stuff that was very, like, fallacious of Calvin Johnson. I wonder how he
he's
in
Richard
the same Rodham. Locker room. Yeah, I can wonder how he can sit in the same locker room.
Yo, here's the thing.
Said,
I think that all three of us are in agreement that Calvin is the top receiver in the league. Do either one of you guys disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree with that.
No, I don't.
But
yeah,
there's a lot to be said about this, though, Jimmy. Like, that's why, you know, because we didn't really get into this on-field vision. We got into, like, the other receivers. But Dez's production isn't, you know, it isn't un-Calvin Johnson-esque. Like, even this season, Dez gets targeted 10 times a game, Johnson 10.2. Dez gets 6 receptions a game. Calvin Johnson gets 5.5. Dez gets 81.3 yards per game. Calvin Johnson gets 82. So, you know, basically, Calvin Johnson has 33 catches for 492 yards and 6 touchdowns this season. Dez has 42 catches, 9 more, for 569 yards.
But
I'm going to
tell you what it is, Dez, because I've had this debate with people all the time about the best receivers. People often forget about Fitzgerald because of where he plays and the quarterbacks he plays with. But when it comes to comparing anyone to Calvin Johnson, it's like the numbers are there, but all anyone can think about is his physical attributes because they look at his size, speed, strength, and they can't, like, take that out of the equation when making the argument. It's not even about his production. It's about what they think he has the ability to do.
Because I definitely don't think – like you said, I'm in agreement that Calvin's the best receiver in the league, but you can't just dismiss Dez. Like, he's a beast.
You can't.
Go ahead, Austin.
You certainly can't. And let me say what Dez said. I feel as though if he were a little bit more intelligent and media savvy, he would be able to defend himself as opposed to actually retracting the statement. Because I don't have a problem with what he said. I feel as though, within respect, he gave Calvin Johnson a measure of respect, but he's supposed to say, I'm the best in the game. And if you don't feel that, playing where you play, having that position, then you need to give up your paycheck and go do something else. So I don't have a problem with Dez saying it at all. Have confidence, young man. You're very talented. I thank my lucky stars as an Eagles fan, although it doesn't mean anything right now because we suck. I thank my lucky stars that Dez Bryant isn't that bright and hasn't figured it out because
we got to get out of here, though, yo. We got to get out of here.
He is dumb talent.
Last point, if you look at their first 3.5 years in comparison, Dez Bryant has better stats than Calvin Johnson did. Just something to chew on.
Again,
but we got to roll.
Everybody's going to always go back to, like I said, his physical attributes, which really should be counted. And also, man, yo,
everybody's
don't
on
forget
Calvin
about
Johnson.
Fitz, man. Yeah, no one gives Larry Fitzgerald his just due, man. Fitzgerald is up there with those two as well. Anyway, thanks for joining us again in the War Room, good people. Shout out to everybody in the chat room on Facebook, Twitter, all the callers who chimed in to holler at us. We apologize for those we couldn't get to because we did have two great guests. Special thanks to Kyle Sefcik and Fred Perdue for joining us on today's show. Make sure to check out Kyle at Shogun Fights 9. That's this Saturday at First Mariner Arena in Baltimore at 7 p.m. Tune in next week, same time, same place, for some Halloween sports talk. Until then, enjoy your weekend and enjoy your week. We'll see you right back here next week. Remember, Facebook.com/WarRoomSports, Twitter.com/WarRoomSports, and WarRoomSportsTV.com for our video content. Until next time, everybody, don't accept mediocrity and be steadfast in the war against ignorance. We'll see you chumps on top.
Know the blueprint. Yo, every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, B-Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial. Call it 323 smoking 0012. They be going and you sensitive, then oh well. Yeah. Physical podcast, let's talk sports. Showtime like magic in the block push. Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us. War Room Sports.
War Room Sports, www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.